Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else, close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And Jake was a little slow on booting up there, but that's all right. You know, that's one of those things where the hard drive is a little corrupted.
I'm still using Windows XP in my brain.
I expect that you will upgrade to Windows
10,
30,
30,
or 40 or something.
I may automatically upgrade against my will.
Yeah, you may be shut down in the middle of you may be right in the middle of doing something and suddenly...
That's going to be my excuse anyway.
Microsoft shuts you down.
Why did he just go to sleep? And now he's waking up and going back to sleep. What's going on? Oh, it's an automatic update. Don't worry about it.
He has a little hourglass where his eyeballs are supposed to be. Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach is not only a riveting radio program, riveting radio reception... There'll be another R in there someplace. Anyway, a riveting radio presentation that occurs on Saturday mornings, and today being April 1st, we should do something silly.
You said it correctly there in riveting, mm-hmm. and that
right.
many people, when they listen to economics, feel like hot iron is being shoved through their body and riveted
in
place.
That's the whole point. So,
welcome to the economics world.
But we're also the Personal Wealth Coach is also the name of an SEC registered investment advisory firm in Slato, Texas, that manages wealth for people with higher net worth. And it just not coincidentally, the Jeff and Jake happen to be the principal advisors there, and they happen to be the principal kibitzers here. And we've been working out it as far as we can tell. It's an entangled correlation. Because they are actually, I don't know if you're familiar with entanglement, but what happens in entanglement if one goes negative, the other one goes positive?
That's just quantum entanglement, because anybody that deals with their Christmas decorations recognize that entanglement doesn't have anything to do with positive.
Large-scale negatives?
There are lots of large-scale negatives.
Well, they were feeling really positive about Christmas, and then they feel really negative about entanglement.
Exactly.
That's it. Anyway, so we have the regulator of the organization in Slato is the SEC, and the regulator of the activities that we're doing here is the FCC. So you've got your choice who to make complaints to, or you can make complaints to two separate governmental entities. Isn't that nice? You can complain in stereo. Anyway, telephone number in here if you would like to call in and interrupt our silliness, which we would encourage you to do so that we can think clearly, is 254-773-1400. And you can ask us or comment about anything that has to do with economics or investing. And we will love to opine vigorously on the subject. And we look forward to such telephone calls. That's it.
No, we don't have anything else to say.
Oh, disclosure. Disclaimer. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a disclosure. The disclaimer is nothing that we say on this radio program should be taken seriously.
Yeah. Well, that's the people know that part already. It's the part about they shouldn't take it as direct and personal investment advice. We're giving an educational program.
If you need investment advice,
you need to come in person. We can't give investment advice in a general sense because it's custom tailored, and we custom tailored it to everybody listening, then we would have really, really baggy pants.
Yes.
There's too many people to fit in.
Right. And the other thing is, if it's educational, it shouldn't be taken too seriously anyway.
You don't take education seriously? You're never going to make it in politics.
No, I didn't as a student. I didn't take it seriously enough. So
did you take it at all, though?
I did, and I noticed that when you and your siblings were in middle school and you'd come home and I would ask you, what did you learn today?
We didn't learn anything. We learned nothing.
Nothing. So this is kind of that type of – it's kind of a middle school sort of educational situation in which you can listen to this thing for years and learn nothing. Learn more and more about less and less until you finally know everything about nothing.
Right. I think I have a pretty good quantity of knowledge on nothing.
You do?
Yeah.
Right. Me too. So, again, the telephone number in here, 254-773-1400. And the lead news for today is that this is April 1st, which means that yesterday was the last day of the first quarter of the year 2017, which certainly sounds like something out of a science fiction movie, because we are now further into the future than Back to the Future went. How do you like that?
So if we watched Back to the Future now, it would really be Back to the Past, but it would think it was the future.
You should rename it into Back to an Alternative Future That Never Happened.
Yes. There's a lot of Orwell books that you have to rewrite. You know, you just have to read it in context of history.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, the
history's future is not necessarily the past.
This week was so exciting that The Trader, which is a column in Barron's Weekly.
Is it written by Snowden?
No, it's written by Ben Levison.
He's a traitor.
But he's a traitor, not a trade
deal. Ah, gotcha.
So you have to understand that the ER and the OR are very, very different.
There's a T and a D in there,
well,
too.
Forget the T or the D. The ER and the OR are different,
right,
too.
Okay.
For instance, an investment advisor as opposed to a financial advisor. And the ER and OR are very different. See, you're rolling your eyes at me.
I was rolling my head. That's both eyes at the same time.
Got it. Anyway, the Dow, the headline, it was so exciting that the S&P 500 was up 0.80% this week.
For the week,
yes,
0.80%.
But the Dow Jones Industrial Average knocked it out of the ballpark. It was up 0.32% for the week.
Whoa.
Well, that was so exciting that the headline is Dow rises 4.6% in sixth straight up quarter.
Well, all they're doing is reaching back far enough and you can find some growth.
Right.
We don't blame them for thinking that way, but it's really strange to have a headline after you have a week with barely any movement, a headline with this great return on it.
Dow rises 4.6% in the quarter.
Well, it is, you know, it's the beginning of the second quarter of the year.
Actually, I think they should write Dow rises S&P 500 rises 5.53% in quarter. That'd be more accurate because it's 500 stocks as opposed to 30.
Right.
So, anyway. So what we had was an up quarter that had down stuff in it and up stuff in it, and not much interesting happened this week. From the stock market perspective, from the economic perspective, a lot of stuff continues. Stuff is one of those technical terms that we use. Happened.
Right. I've got a real quick one to throw out there.
All right. As long as you don't throw up.
I will throw out, not up.
Okay.
There is something that during the Obama administration, I ranted a little bit about.
Okay.
He was over-regulating the environment. That he was putting mandatory regulations in there, and then President Trump coming in is removing a bunch of them, including some that I would say were not over-regulating the environment. He's removing those because in politics we have to have these big pendulum swings where one person goes way too far in one direction, then the next goes the other way.
Use another technical term.
What's that?
Bunch.
Bunch, yes.
Okay. Stuff and bunch are the technical terms.
Well, the real reason why I was ranting about it when Obama was president was that I believe that each of these economic changes need to be economically inspired, not regulatorily inspired. Sometimes regulation is necessary. When we have rivers that are lighting on fire, it's probably a good idea to have a pretty good standard set out there. But once the shareholders figure out that there's a problem and it needs to be addressed, it's generally a better idea to let economics handle it rather than having a government step in and put regulations on something that don't get updated with technology. So as the current president, Trump, is reversing quite a lot of the overreach of the Obama administration, he's also reversing some of the underreach of the Obama administration on the environment. However, this is the joy. What we're getting out of it is there's a whole, we can use the technical term again, bunch of large companies, General Electric, Apple, Google, both mainstream industrial as well as technology companies that are coming out and saying that they are not going to revise their own internal policies. They're going to keep going as if those regulations were still in existence. That's the kind of regulation I like. non-governmental regulation that's done by the corporation of their own activity that allows them to show to their shareholders and their customers, see, this is a benefit because we're doing fill in the blank, this good thing, and we're still able to be really profitable. Where the government steps in and says something that is not reasonable. And let me give you a historical context here. You know this. This is something you have flown over Haiti in the past.
Yes, I have.
And you can look out the window.
And the Dominican Republic at the same time.
Yes. So the Dominican Republic and Haiti are on the same island.
Hispaniola.
Yes. And there is a line on a map that you can actually see. There's no border characteristic other than the line on the map, except that now there is. When you fly over Hispaniola, which is the island that holds both countries, you can look out the window of your airplane if it's daytime or if you have the appropriate night vision. And you can look down and see the border very clearly because Haiti has no trees. It has been completely stripped clean of trees. Where Dominican Republic has this beautiful forested area that comes right up to the border. And we look at that and we say, how could Haiti have done that? How could they have knowingly stripped all their trees so that they could make charcoal out of it for campfires and cooking and stuff? That is just absurd. And then I'm going to make another reference. You've also flown over Scotland.
I have.
You see a lot of trees out in Scotland?
No. Well, actually, in some places.
In some places, they've regrown.
Right.
The reality is that the same thing happened in Scotland and in Ireland and most of Northern Europe, because technology at the time, and this is just make it clear in an economic sense, we tend to change to protect the environment. If the environment is becoming too uncomfortable for us, and our change doesn't make us too uncomfortable. So we switched from charcoal to coal and stopped chopping down trees to do all of our metal work and all of our industrial work. And that's really the reason why Scotland and Ireland have no trees, is they were cutting down for a long time to heat their houses. But blacksmiths use a huge amount of charcoal. If you have people that know how to mine metal and you have to smelt that metal, then the smelters use an even larger amount of charcoal, which means all your forests get used up. But personally speaking, just from my own perspective, I don't know how you feel about this, but I prefer using metal to rock. To bang on things with. If I'm, you know, trying to hammer a nail into my wall, I would much rather use a hammer and a nail than a twig and a rock. And so people aren't going to stop using charcoal until there's a better alternative. In this case, it was coal. Well, then coal started doing the black fog of London. People thought they were making this wonderful environmental shift, and they were, because if they continued with the charcoal idea, we'd have no trees left on the planet. So then we went to coal, and that caused this air pollution. So then we started cleaning up the coal, and that wasn't quite enough, and then we went to natural gas, but only when it's economically feasible, only when the technology is there to allow us to make the shift without being uncomfortable. That's the history of humanity. Is that if technology is there to make the world better, we're going to use it. And whatever the word better means is up to us. And if switching from coal to natural gas also cleans up the environment, but we don't have to spend any more for it, and the electricity, I've tasted this myself, it tastes the same from a coal generator to a natural gas generator. It's very shocking. But this electricity that we're getting from coal or from natural gas is the same electricity, and it's coming at a lower price. So economics drives innovation, and we're allowed to look around and say the ethics and morality of the world changes with technology. And a simple statement here is that, do you believe, this is a question to you, old Baldy across from me, do you think that we are more ethical and moral than, say, 200 years ago?
Yes.
In what way?
Who's we?
Well, we as humanity.
I don't know about humanity, but civilization.
Say United States.
Civilization.
Okay, so we no longer use slavery. That's an example of ethics and morality that we can look back at our former generations and say, this was a horrible thing. And yet that was something, and it wasn't one race that was enslaved. It was all races that were enslaved, going back to the beginning of civilization and beyond. But it took coal and steam for us to realize that we could do something about our ethics and our morality. That's the point I'm trying to make here, is that if we don't increase the technology to allow the things that we're uncomfortable with to be more comfortable, then it's not going to happen through regulation. Because if government says there's a 55 mile an hour speed limit across the board, but we have places we want to go, and living in Texas, it's a big state. It takes a long time to get from one place to another. So surveys back in the 90s and early 2000s, when the 55 mile an hour speed limit was still in existence, surveys showed that 86% of people driving admitted to driving well above the speed limit on the highway. Well, now the highway speed limit has been raised, and people admit to driving the speed limit, which means that the regulation is now matching the reality of the world. When regulations overreach, we all know it because we can look around and feel it. If you're being told that you can't open your business because you're only allowed to turn your lights on between the hours of 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., that's not rational. It might be rational if you're on Mars, but not here. If you're doing it just for that purpose, then we need a better technology. Elon Musk is a good example of someone who's putting his money where his mouth is. Rather than going to a regulatory approach, he's saying, let's push the technology and make it profitable at every step. That's American, and I like it. And that's my soapbox, and I'll step down now. My feet are nice and clean.
You clean your feet on a soapbox?
Well, every time I stand on my soapbox for any length of time, I can step down and look down and at least have soap on my feet. It may not mean that they're completely clean, but...
Well, you know, such is life. Hey, the important thing is that the market is up.
Yes.
To get back to the subject that I was on. And if you look at 1 year, it becomes a little more interesting. The 52-week rise... And the Dow Jones Industrial Average is a little over 16%. It's just under 14% for the S&P 500. But don't expect that into the future. The one-year return right now of the market is delightful if you're invested in the market, in the stock market in the United States at least. And there are a lot of places we look where we see this amazing return. A couple of things that are really important to recognize in this return. First, it is because the market was abnormally low a year ago. And why was it abnormally low a year ago? A lot of people forget the fact that a year ago, just over a year ago, it was in February actually, the consensus was that we were sliding into recession because the price of oil was too low. We did argue here that that doesn't make any sense.
Because most businesses run better with lower prices of oil.
And historically, what's happened is oil has been an indicator of the global economy. When the oil prices fell, it was because of a decrease in
demand.
And in fact, we are using globally and in the United States less oil than we've used in the past. But it isn't because of a lack of demand. It's because we've gotten very efficient. The fact is that $100+ per barrel oil created high cost of fuel, which created the incentive to buy, to create, sell, and for the people who bought them, to buy and use vehicles and machines that are very efficient.
Wait, didn't I just talk about this with Haiti and the Dominican Republic and how technology drives innovation when it comes to... People are saying, don't burn fossil fuels as they drive around in the big SUVs, you know, the movie stars in their Hummers and telling the rest of the world that they needed to cut back. And now when the price got up high enough that the rest of us got uncomfortable, technology stepped up.
You know, so this, but the market that we have right now has a 1-year return that's just amazingly good. But, and here's the key, if you actually look at what drives the market, it's earnings of S&P 500 companies. And the S&P 500 companies' earnings have been rising at a little over 6% a year for a long time, since 1988. Which means the actual index number, the number of, like, right, this week was the S&P 500 closed at 2362.72, or the Dow Jones Industrial Average is 2066. That number is the indicator. 2663. I'm sorry, I missed the number there by one digit. It is the total return because it doesn't count dividends, but it is the number that we're looking at in a price to earnings ratio then changes over time. And we have a pretty fairly valued market right now. It's got some low places in it if you're an astute investor. But the fact that it ran up about that the S&P 500 is up 14% for 1 year, or the Dow is up 16% for 1 year, hasn't made any big headlines, but I'm sure some people have noticed it in their portfolios by now. And what Jake was saying is right. As we increase our efficiency, we'll probably get a lot better as we go down the road. And I happen to agree with you, by the way. I want to affirm everything that you said about the regulatory issues. There are places for regulation.
Yeah. We do need to have laws against murder. That's pretty simple.
Well, we also have to – I think the environmental protection laws
you need some
make
minimal.
A lot of sense.
Yeah, you need some amount of environmental protection to prevent the either extremely ignorant or the insane from really making the rest of us uncomfortable.
Well, actually, if a company wants to make profits and it can increase its profit margin – by not regulating its let's say it's a manufacturing company and it has and it's doing plating and heavily metal works, and the stuff that comes out of that is so toxic it would cause just about anything to die.
Right.
The cheapest way to deal with it is just dump it either on the ground or into a river. And so profitability goes up if we can get rid of environmental protections.
This is where China's a good example.
Right.
And that for a long time, that's how they've done it, which is why people have to wear face masks in Beijing. Enough people are wearing face masks that companies there are making their own decisions to self-regulate, and they're causing Chinese people to buy more from their companies. If it's a market-driven event and you can identify the wrongdoer, that's kind of the big deal. Because in the Industrial Revolution in the United States, you couldn't point at any single company and say, they're the reason why pollution exists, because everybody was doing it. Well, then we had some regulations that say, you guys, here's some minimum standards. Stop making the rain dissolve our umbrellas. And they met the minimum standards. Then the way we police each other, some of that's with the media, whether that's right wing, left wing, or the wing that's kind of the fin wing, I don't know, the one in the middle, if there is one. That's how we police each other. We say, hey, we're going to let the world know that you're dumping fill in the blank horrible toxic waste into fill in the blank wonderful economic environment. And then the buyers can say, well, I'm not going to buy from that company anymore. And that's really what drives a decision from a corporation perspective. Here's another good example. Fracking. Do you know, and I mentioned this in the past, so you should probably remember this, but this is, do you know the state in the United States that has the most earthquakes right now?
Oklahoma?
Yes.
Yes.
Now, 15 years ago, Oklahoma was one of the most stable as far as earthquake activity, seismic activity, Oklahoma. They didn't go in the same sentence. Well, fracking started. There's not a doubt in anyone who's actually looked at this as to where these earthquakes came from. The fracking didn't do it. It's the putting of the fracking liquid, the stuff that you use to dissolve and spray on the rocks to get the shale to turn into the stuff that we can use. When you dump that back into the ground in a fault area, it continues to dissolve the stuff around it, and it releases the tension of the ground around it. And you can look at the seismic activity graphs and go to Google Earth and in Oklahoma, and you can see exactly which facility pumped the stuff in the ground to cause the earthquake. And you can do it every day because there's earthquakes every day. Texas does fracking too. And Texas is not famous for overregulation. It's the other way around. And yet, we don't have huge amounts of earthquakes. We've got a few. But we have some simple rules on how to dispose of that waste. Not rules that are onerous, not rules that prevent fracking. Rules that allow the frackers to reuse that stuff in the next well. Well, that means that there's a rule that allows it to transport on the highway, which could be dangerous. California won't allow that. Well, California's not going to be a fracking mecca in any time in the future. So our technology, and Texas is big on environment. I mean, we've got the vast majority of Texas is privately owned. It's got less publicly owned as a percentage than any other state in the country. And that means we self-regulate our environment. If illegal immigrants are crossing our private property, that's a bigger reason for us to enforce border security than because of jobs. And that's where Texas is. From the political perspective, we also regulate the environment in the same way. We don't want our personal property to go down in value based on the neighbors next door destroying theirs. That's the right way to regulate. And I wish that in some ways that that would spread to the rest of the country. It would be different elsewhere because people have different opinions of what should be the most important part of their property. Anyway, we're way off on a tangent from when you were talking about the market. The idea here, and we can hit oil one more time. Oil, there's a headline, I was just looking at it. Oil prices are breaking a three-week record. Are you familiar with this?
Yes.
There's a three-week record being broken. Oil is up to a higher place than it's been for 3 weeks. And the reason is because they think OPEC is going to be maintaining its lower output. And in that maintenance of lower output, we have a lower supply. So let's try and make it the simplest possible. A lower supply from OPEC. Fracking is still there, and fracking production is going up right now. And we're getting better at fracking. So expect oil prices to be pretty well capped right around $52 a barrel. It may spike upward just a little bit above that, but we've got too many people ready to come online and start pumping oil again. It's pumping in a very different way than it used to. But we've got an abundance of supply waiting to come out. All right. Do you want to play some commercials or do you?
Sure.
Okay. So on the other side of the commercials, we'll have more of the Personal Wealth Coach. The number to call in here if you would like to join in our conversation is 254-773-1400. And we'll be back on the other side of these commercials with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
We expect this.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
That's it. Mm-hmm. We are here.
For those of you who are listening on the air, I want to emphasize something here. The two commercials that were just played, we do not in any way choose, support, or endorse. Well, that's the nicest way I can say it.
Yeah.
Both cases are irrational, illogical, and potentially highly dangerous, and that'll just stop there. Okay? And you are listening to Personal Wealth Coach, and our telephone number in here is 254-773-1400 if you'd like to come in and join in with us. Talking about the market for the week and the market for the quarter, it was a bit fascinating thing went on this quarter. The reason the market is up roughly 5%, depending on whether you're looking at the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the S&P 500, for the quarter really boils down to the fact that we've had some good economic news come out. And we've had a lot of positive, steady rolling, and we can talk about that at length, the various good news things that have come out. For example, we are, for the first time since 1970, have gone 108 weeks with less than 300,000 layoffs per week in the United States. And the economy and the population was a lot smaller in 1970 than it is today. And despite that, we have fewer people being laid off over the last 2 years in the United States than we had in 1970. We have an unemployment rate that is so low nationally that it is at or below what economists have generally considered to be full employment. And so we see a lot of things going on. We see wages going up. Officially, the Commerce Department, I'm sorry, the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out and said that wages are up 3.7% year over year.
They also said one other thing.
What's that?
They revised the last quarter's GDP up to 2.1. It was 1.9.
So between in all of these things, what we're seeing is an underlying economy that's good. And we're going to talk about this in just a minute, but corporate earnings are not only up, and this is one of the things that you don't hear a lot about, are not only up double digits over the last year, but we expect to see more of that going forward. And basically for this year, there's been some estimates come in from S&P that suggest we could see a 20% rise in corporate earnings this year. Now, that's not solid. It's not nailed down yet. But that's the kind of thing that has caused the market to rise. Now, here's the interesting point. Right after the election, there was a jump in the stock market, and the stocks that jumped right after the election have generally sagged, and the stocks that sagged right after the election have risen. And that's what's driven the market up. I think there's a big opportunity here to mistake what's called the Trump trade in the business as being why the market is up. And I'm not saying anything negative about President Trump. It's just that the fact is that the stocks that jumped when he was elected or shortly after he was elected have sagged. And the stocks, including tech stocks, that sagged right after he was elected have risen. And there's been this trade-off internal to the market that has changed the way things are going forward. As a matter of fact, there's a consensus out there for that the programs, at least in the stock market, one can see a consensus in investors that all the things that the president promised of those, none of them will happen. So that's where we are right now. What you got?
Wanted to talk a bit, emphasize with the U.S. economic growth. This was, you know, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, when they come out with something, it's never the most exciting.
No, it is.
The bureaucrats have made an announcement on spreadsheet format.
Hang on just a second. My two favorite governmental organizations.
Both bureaus.
Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Bureau of Economic Analysis.
Right.
They're completely different cabinet positions.
They're bureau positions. Cabinets are a different kind of furniture.
Well, the cabinets are a furnishing. You can have a cabinet.
Cabinet in a bureau could be sitting next to it. You could have a cabinet in a bureau.
But these bureaus are inside of cabinet.
Which
positions.
Is very strange if you think about it from a furnishing perspective.
Yeah, but I love those two bureaus. They produce a lot of geeky data and spreadsheets that I like to look at.
They self-identify as bureaucrats. The worst kind of bureaucrat are the ones that don't know they're bureaucrats. So by definition, those ones know they're bureaucrats.
You know, when as a kid, I wanted to be either a firefighter or a jet pilot or something like that. And now if I had to come back again, I think I would really love to be in the Bureau of Economic Analysis.
Right, right. That's probably not something you'll hear a lot of teenagers say.
I just think it'd be...
I've got another subject there that I can pull into in just a minute when we finish the GDP. The revision upward to 2.1, that's the third revision to the fourth quarter of 2016. And I told you it was boring. The concept that they could revise it three times. They're going to revise it one more time, and then it'll be semifinal until they do a five-year review, and then they might revise it again. So what did the economy actually do? If they've now revised it upwards twice since their initial statement. And what that means is that they're finding more growth, not less growth. The thing everyone should hear when they read about a governmental agency measuring the economy is that there's no way to get it exactly right. It's kind of like health. The way they used to measure blood pressure is they would slice you open and stick a glass vial that was sealed on one end and sharpened and hollow on the other. They would stick that up into a vein, and then they could measure how high up the vial the blood went pushing against that air. We found a better way of doing that. In fact, the way of taking blood pressure in that way of slicing you open and sticking a piece of glass into you could, in the cases where you need the blood pressure reading the most, kill you instead of get you a good reading. That's kind of the way we still measure economics. In order to measure it, we're interfering with it. If you do a measurement of economics, you got to interrupt somebody's business day to ask them what's going on in their business. And we don't have a really good way of measuring that. What we do have is something that's giving us pretty accurate results. It's better than we've ever had. We're still in the stick the glass vial in the arm phase, but we can still look to see how far up the blood goes in the vial. And when we're talking about GDP, there's a lot of stuff wrong with the calculations that they do for GDP. But the reason why it's still a good figure to watch is because it's a solid baseline measurement that's measuring the same thing that it's been measuring for decades. So that we can look at, okay, it's a bad calculation, but it's the same bad calculation that's given us pretty decent results for a long period of time. We can look at that and say, we're growing. We're not growing at 1980s speed. We're growing at, 2016, the entire year grew at a 1.6% rate, even with the revision to the fourth quarter. I expect this year will be a higher growth rate because we're seeing industrial output and a lot of the other big economic indicators come out to say that there's a lot more demand that's been pent up and it's finally being used. We're far enough away from the recession that there's adults today that didn't have a danger of losing their job in the recession because they were in middle school. Does that feel weird to you, by the way?
You're talking about the recession of 1973?
Oh, right. No, yeah, that's ancient history. Forget about it. No, I mean the one that's not ancient history unless you're a teenager. And what that means...
How about the recession of 1998?
Right, right. When people... There was a recession in 98? What? So the idea here is that we've got growth in the economy. Those of us that have been around long enough need to remember to pass on our wisdom, not that typically is a problem. It's more like we need to not pass on our wisdom because nobody wants to hear it. Keeping in mind that we've got good growth going ahead, I'm going to give you a survey that just came out, the one that I said, hold on to that thought for a minute. A lot of teenagers, millennials, were surveyed and asked what they wanted to do for a living. And the headline was that teenagers today don't want to do the work that's available in the future, that they're all talking about the incentive to work is in the wrong places, and the teenagers are, if this is the reality of the future, then we're going to have an economic collapse. That's the headline, sort of. And the reality is that if you asked me what I wanted to be as a teenager, I'd probably say an astronaut too. That's really, they said that 17% of the teenagers responded that they wanted to be an artist or a musician. And they treated that like it was a horrible statement about the future. I think we do this every generation. We look back and we say, the kids, they just don't know what they want to be. Well, I've got a 2-year-old daughter that is convinced that she's going to fly around the room when she wants to. So let the teenagers decide what they want to do. And if it inspires them, it inspired us to, reality's going to set in. Let it. Don't worry so much about the fear tactics. What you got?
Well, change the subject here. I mentioned earlier I was going to talk about corporate profits.
Yes.
S&P, well, specifically a guy named Silverblatt at S&P, who I think his name's Howard Silverblatt, and I actually met him once. He's the senior index analyst there, a man I admire tremendously because he loves to make spreadsheets that are very, very accurate, and I get to look at them every week. But he said he's estimating when corporate earnings are reported for the first quarter, the one that just ended, which will occur over the next 60 to 90 days, you'll see the corporate earnings come in if you watch these things. You're going to see something in the on an average around 22%. In other words, you're going to see earnings up 22% from last year. You want to know why the market's up? That's why the market's up. Why are corporate earnings up? Well, because corporations are getting better at what they're doing. People are spending more money because there are more people employed, and the people employed have more income. That's very mundane. I don't know if you'll read about it in the paper. I don't know that it will make the national headlines or be reported on Fox News. But the reality is we have been in a recovery for a long time. The Federal Reserve did a good job. They put money into the economy long enough to get it not to fail, and now they're beginning to reduce the influx of money. And by the way, on their next meeting and at the meeting after that, I fully expect them to raise interest rates, and they will gradually be sucking money out of the economy in the near future. Now, that sounds a little strange. They've been pumping money into the economy. We did not get runaway inflation. We don't have, we'll talk about, there's a new inflation number came out this week that I think is very important. But the point is that we're in a steady, slow growth, healthy economy. Everything points in that direction. And short term, we're in this phenomenally, potentially healthy economy, and the big threats seem to have laid off. And for example, the Trump administration has now signaled officially that they don't want to get rid of NAFTA. And I don't know why that didn't make big headlines.
No, I didn't even see it.
They officially sent a document to Congress stating they have to give Congress before they renegotiate a trade treaty. The administration has to notify Congress that it's either 60 or 90 days in advance, so Congress can get upset about it. They've officially, the trade negotiator, the Office of Trade Negotiation, it's a separate office, has actually officially notified Congress that we want to keep NAFTA, but we want to make some changes in it. And the changes are, we want to discuss, and it's as far as we want to go so far, the percentage of an item that can be imported into the across NAFTA that is made outside of NAFTA.
Right.
We want to discuss this.
Yeah, this is an interesting point, and it's worth discussing.
It's in NAFTA.
Right. This is an example of a reason for that. Oil. We import oil. We are a net exporter of oil, but we import oil. We import the majority of the oil that we import, by the way, from another country comes from Mexico, which is very strange. Well, because the Mexicans aren't necessarily producing the oil that we're importing from Mexico. Mexicans are producing some of that oil, but they're also importing oil from other places and then exporting it to us, and mm-hmm. that's outside of NAFTA. So they're able to have a trade agreement with another country and then bring that oil into the United States through NAFTA, and that's worth discussing.
But the actual quantity has to be when they send in a truckload of oil, for example. Over half of it has to be produced in Mexico.
Yes, and it's not generally a truckload. It's coming through pipes. So
however it's coming in. Right. So a majority of it has to come from a NAFTA country. And the two things we want to discuss, one, we want to discuss the percentages. By the way, the Office of Trade Negotiation did not say whether we wanted to raise or lower the percentage. The other thing we want to discuss, and this is what they said, is we want to streamline the reconciliation process.
And this isn't the voting thing for Congress.
If there's a dispute, what we want to do is speed up the process.
Dispute resolution should speed up.
That's all.
Well, they're also doing a survey, and I read about this. They're doing a survey on where the imbalance of trade tends to be in NAFTA. Mm-hmm. What is most exported by a given country, what is most imported by a given country, and why those imbalances exist.
Yeah, there's a survey going on, but what happens is the administration has to notify Congress what they want to change in the trade agreement.
Right.
And they have now given 90 days notice that those are the two items they want to discuss. Now and the reason I bring this up is you may remember there was one of the presidential candidates wanted to dump NAFTA. It was a terrible deal.
It was the worst deal ever signed in the history of the United States.
And he wanted rid of it, the presidential candidate, we won't say which one, wanted rid of it completely and was going to rip it out and throw it away. And the result is that he is going to discuss two items, the percentage of imported.
You just said who it was.
I did?
Yeah, by saying he's going to discuss it.
Well, there were a whole series of presidential candidates.
That's
true. One of them got nominated. I won't say that, but
I think anybody can read a newspaper though. They know you're talking about the president.
Well, okay. Well, he's so there's a slight change in policy there. And I think that's probably the way it's going to go. Is that we're going to tinker around with NAFTA just a little bit and ultimately make no changes.
And This is always a tough moment for me. I talk about it, but I've seen it enough times. It's a tough moment for me to watch the innocence of a new president get shattered. And this healthcare bill really was the shattering of the innocence of the Trump administration, in that they realized that politics does not bend to their will. Obama had the same thing happen multiple times at about the same time period. They just weren't as big a scale. His big shattering of innocence took place 2 years after he was in office.
And the stocks that rose because tax cuts would benefit them tremendously have now sagged.
Right.
Which means that the market is saying
it may or may not happen. Probably we'll just bet on the status quo for a while.
Don't expect a massive tax cut because the Congressional Budget Office came out with something that kind of put a torpedo in that. We'll talk about next hour. But the Congressional Budget Office came out with a mandated report that comes out at the end of the first quarter every year, forecasting the effect of the deficit and where we will be over the next 30 years. Now, 30-year forecasts are not particularly accurate, but when you look at the Congressional Budget Office, and you realize that as often as people denigrate that office and say what a terrible job they're doing of forecasting, they have the best, most accurate, and most respected record of any organization for economic forecasting.
Yeah, I wish I had a moment more to talk about that, to agree with you there on that. We'll talk about that some more next hour, I think. But we're about out of time for this hour. If you would like to contact us off the air, we actually do give personalized investment advice and portfolio management to clients of high net worth. If you would like to call us off the air, The phone numbers.
I think a lot of people would like to call us off the air.
Right. The phone number to call there locally is
254-947-1111.
Or you can reach it toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly, and we love it when you do. Jake at tpwc.com or Jeff at tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, to listen to more podcasts of this program and others like it that we've done in the past. Read our philosophy, the newsletter that we put out every week, and you can sign up for that as well. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
KTEM, AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.